Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Thursday, June 14th, 2018. I'm Sam Minter, and Yvonne Bo can't be with us again today. So Ed is joining us. Hello, Ed.
Hello.
And Ed just asked me right before we started recording, well, where is Yvonne this time? And I started thinking about it, and then I realized I don't even know. I don't know where the guy is. He's somewhere. He may even be home for all I know. But he indicated that all week this week he was busy. He had stuff going on Wednesday. He had stuff going on Thursday. He had stuff going on Friday. He just wasn't going to be able to make it work. Meanwhile, I am going with my wife for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday to the Washington State Democratic Convention. It's not an election year, but, you know, they have them in the in-between years, too. And my wife is a delegate this year. She's been getting increasingly involved in Democratic Party politics in Snohomish County, Washington, and she's a delegate. And so she's going, she has work to do there. I'm going to accompany her as, you know, the arm candy, I guess. And
isn't there an election this November?
There is an election this November, absolutely. No presidential election, but we got everything else on the table. So all kinds of other stuff going on. So I will be going to that to, you know, basically keep her company. But, you know, if I find anything interesting, I'll take my little recorder with me and maybe I'll tape something here or there, or maybe not. You know, it's not going to be quite as interesting, perhaps, as the one in a presidential year was, that I did a bunch of interviews and stuff for this show. We'll see, but I'll report back on it. In any case, I'll give you my impressions on next week's show. But in any case, so no Yvonne, and the only day I could do it was earlier. Like I said, it's Thursday UTC, which is we've been doing it typically on Saturday UTC lately. So it'll be a couple days earlier. And I also, because we're leaving, I'm going to try to get it out before I leave. So the show is going to be out a couple days earlier than it usually is, too, which is unusual. And so sorry for throwing everybody off their schedules and blah, blah, blah. And also, it means that the events that happen in the latter half of the week on Thursday and Friday, we won't be able to talk about. Sorry about that, too. We'll get to them next week. But the agenda we do have, I'm actually trying to back off a little bit, and we're not doing this specifically on things that happened this exact week. We're going to talk about a few more general things. So, like, yeah, okay, North Korea, the summit happened. It kind of went sort of the way that Yvonne and I predicted, I guess. We didn't have a major immediate disaster, but it was kind of a big nothing. But you know, there's a lot of argument about whether Trump gave away something for nothing and blah, 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 blah. You know, whatever. We're going to pass on that for today. There's more Trump-Russia stuff, as there always is. You know, Cohen's apparently about to flip. I don't know. You know, we're going to pass on those for now. The topics that we are going to talk about is one, and the first two are suggestions Ed made. The first one is the new right to try law, which Congress passed a few weeks ago now. And I believe Donald Trump has already signed. Is that correct, Ed? Do you know? I believe that's
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
And so this is the law now. And so Ed being a retired doctor, has some thoughts on this. And I have not followed it in detail, so I want Ed to educate me a little bit about it. And we'll go back and forth and talk about it a little bit. Because at least in principle, it sounds like a good thing, right? Like if you're a terminal case and there's some experimental drug, then you've used up all the things that, you know, why not try something? What can it hurt? So we'll talk about that some. And then second is Ed called out an article or a couple articles, I guess, from David Leonhardt in the New York Times, basically from June 11th and June 12th, basically implying that it seems like Trump is intentionally trying to destroy the Western alliances. And this ties to what Yvonne and I talked about on the G7 last week, although the real blow up of it happened after we recorded the show. But it goes beyond that. So we'll talk a little bit about that idea. Like, do we believe that Trump is intentionally trying to cause damage or something else? Or is he trying to do what he really thinks is right, and it just is perceived as damage by lots of other people? And then finally, I also saw a story, which I can't remember. I've been trying to find the actual story to reference it, but I have failed so far. Basically about why Russiagate and the implications of it have not taken off with the general public, you know, especially with Republicans, but also just amongst the public as a whole are sort of like, oh, there they go talking about Russia again, blah, 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 and why that might be. And there was one article I read that brought up the idea that it's basically a lot of it has to do with the fact that the story is so complex that the press isn't able to sort of give a good, concise, hey, here's the overall narrative. Here this is. Here's why it's important. Instead, it's concentrating every week on this week's new revelations, this week's new minute details. And so, and it's so complex, you're sort of missing the forest for the trees, and people tune out. Meanwhile, Donald Trump just keeps saying, witch hunt, witch hunt, witch hunt. I can't even say it after the third time. Witch hunt, witch hunt, witch hunt. And that's a very simple message that's easy to understand. It's like, they're after me, it's all bullshit. And that's all you have to say, you know? So those are our three topics. Unless you have something else to add to this beginning segment, Ed, I think we'll keep the beginning short and jump right in after a break. What do you think?
Sounds good to me.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and then we will talk about Right to Try. Back after this. You're listening to this podcast. Do you like it?
No!
Do you want to support the show?
No!
Well, after you have subscribed to the show, followed us on Facebook, and told all your friends they should be listening to, what else can you do?
I won't subscribe!
You can help fund our Patreon at patreon.com/curmudgeonscorner. Patreon is a way you can throw us a few bucks a month to help out with the expenses of the show. You know, web hosting, equipment, a little bit of advertising to promote the show, and maybe every once in a while some much-needed sedatives for Yvonne. At different contribution levels, you can get a mention on the show, our Curmudgeon's Corner postcard, or even a Curmudgeon's Corner mug. Fun stuff.
Not fun.
In any case, the contributions help tell us that you enjoy and appreciate the show.
I really, really hate Curmudgeon's Corner.
Are we worth a buck a month?
No!
$5 a month?
No!
Or if you are nuts about us, maybe even more.
Anywhere near $1 billion.
If we're worth anything to you at all, send it our way at patreon.com/curmudgeonscorner.
Alex hates, really, really hates Curmudgeon's Corner. That's really mean, isn't it? But I hate Curmudgeon's Corner, but I really do!
Okay, we are back. Ed, I mentioned this briefly in the starting bit. This right to try law, as I understand it, is basically something that says if you are a terminal patient, you can get authorized to try all sorts of drugs and treatments that have not passed through all the normal FDA trials for safety and efficacy. And the way it's sold is that basically, you know, hey, you're terminal, you've tried everything you can try, there's this experimental thing here that somebody thinks might work, why the hell not? So if you could start by first, basically, am I understanding the law correctly? And then
I think you've got it precisely, yeah.
And then, okay, great, yay me. Then I guess we can jump into, this sounds good. What is so bad about that?
Well, there's several things. Number one, over the years, our pharmaceutical industry has developed lots of drugs, and periodically they have pushed or people have pushed to see there's some exciting new drug. We need to get it out onto the market right away because it's so important. It'll relieve all this suffering and all this disease, and they push it through. And invariably, when that, and I shouldn't say invariably, but quite frequently when that has happened, a drug has come onto the market that later on we found out had some really dreadful side effects. The most common one was that the drug for morning sickness, and forgive me the name of it, back just before I started, thalidomide, yeah. Just before I started medical school, thalidomide was pushed through the FDA, and over their hesitancy, was approved. Fortunately, a very short time in the United States. Europe had it quite a lot longer because they don't have as strict a restriction of new experimental drugs, but basically harmed thousands of children around the world by causing them to be born without arms and legs and other major birth defects. And out of that came a much stronger FDA that said, we're just not going to have that happen to us again. Now, flash forward another 55 years. It's been a long time since I graduated from med school. But we now have my congressman, unfortunately, pushing through, along with a bunch of other people, this drug, that this legislation that sounds wonderful. It says, look, if I'm dying, I ought to be able to take any drug I want, because it might help me, it might not help me, and if it doesn't help me, then no one's hurt but me, I die with it. And that sounds great, and you say, well, how can I be opposed to that? Well, I can think of several reasons very quickly. Number one is, who's going to pay for the drug? Because these drugs are not cheap. The new drugs that are coming out for cancer and amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, Lou Gehrig's disease, and a whole host of other diseases that are terminal illnesses, hopeless diagnoses, and the drugs that are coming out for these are drugs that cost several hundred thousand dollars a year. And the only people who can afford to pay for that out of their pocket are that top 1% we keep talking about.
And presumably presumably none of this would be covered by insurance because it's experimental and unproven.
Well, that's the issue, is until this legislation passed, most insurances, if not all of them, but including those that are funded by the United States government, TRICARE, Medicare, Medicaid, said, we don't pay for experimental drugs. We don't pay for experimental therapy. My last job before I retired was as a medical director, and one of the things I had to determine most frequently was, is this given therapy experimental? Is it not experimental? Or is it, in a couple of several occasions, actually, it was specific treatments were listed as experimental and not covered. And as I researched them, when someone would ask, you know, a physician would ask to do a treatment for a patient, when I researched through it, I found that the current literature was saying, hey, this is not experimental, it's approved. And I was able to get TRICARE to change their policy. That happened at least three or four times I can think of. So, but the issue is that stuff that is still experimental and not proven is not covered by most companies. But this legislation raises the issue that we might say to insurance companies, hey, the government said you have to cover it. And before you say, well, no, the government doesn't say that, let me tell you that not too many years ago, somebody came up with a bright idea that bone marrow transplants would be a great idea for breast cancer patients. And an insurance company said, well, it's unproven, it's experimental, we're not going to cover it. People sued, and the courts eventually ordered insurance companies to pay for it. And after thousands of these were done, we found out that not only did they not prolong life, but they killed a lot of women. And this was at a cost of millions and millions of dollars to patients and insurance companies both for a therapy that had not yet gone through the rigors of proving that it was effective. So
for one clarification on the law, does it at least require that the drugs they're talking about be in the process at all? Or does it open the door to, like, you know, me setting up an online store for some random crap that I have no, I just start saying, yeah, this is going to cure your cancer.
That's a good question, because the next area of concern is people in, there's a guy by the name of Brzezinski in Texas, who treats people all sorts of completely unproven crap. You know, Laetrile and other sorts of hokum and absolutely unproven and ineffective stuff, treats it at a cost of huge costs, and has sued numerous times to have these covered. And at least one of the speculations says that maybe this should be covered now because we have said that people have the right to try. And that was every time I had someone who wanted to go to Brzezinski to get approval for us to pay for their care, that was the issue, was I'm dying. Nothing else is helping me. Maybe this will help me. You should cover it. And that's the right to try.
I was just going to say, do you think the main issue is around the sort of who pays and, does insurance cover it? Does Medicare cover it? All that kind of stuff. Or is the main issue just around, the idea of, people potentially trying to get rich off of peddling shit that doesn't work and taking advantage of
it? It's really both. It's really both, because many of these unproven drugs will actually harm people.
Right.
And so it's an issue that without rigorous scientific studies showing that the drug is at least harmless, we're going to be injuring people.
Let me take the libertarian position for a minute here and just ask for your reaction to it, which is that, as long as this full disclosure where you say this hasn't gone through to tests, we don't know if it'll work or not. For that matter, we don't know. It might hurt you. Shouldn't it be the person's right to make that decision? Let's say that they're paying for it themselves. So let's leave insurance out of it for the moment. Shouldn't it be my right to decide I want to try this versus I don't? And then if there was a misrepresentation here, then potentially that could be criminal, or that could be something that would be a matter for a lawsuit. But as long as everybody's upfront about the fact that, hey, we don't know if it works, but feel free to give it a try. I'll give you a pill for $10,000. Why shouldn't it be that person's choice?
Yeah. Well, and probably I'm enough of a, I don't know what I am anymore. I used to think I was conservative, then I was liberal, and I was libertarian for a while, and now I'm liberal again. But whatever it is, I'm enough of a libertarian, I guess, to think people ought to be able to do what they want to their bodies, and that has to do with a lot of drugs. The real issue is that, number one, I don't think healthcare should be injuring people, and many of these experimental drugs will actually turn out to injure people. Then, but if they want to spend a couple hundred thousand dollars of the money, I guess they ought to be able to. But that's
so. Isn't that fundamentally
what
this law does, though?
Yeah, except that what really happens is that within the next 6 months, 12 months at the most, your next door neighbor or my next door neighbor is going to have a cancer that's terminal, or a child who's dying of a glioma. That says, "Well, Jesus Christ, my kid's dying, and this drug might save his life. I've got to have it, but I only earn $10,000 a year. How can I pay for this drug? You have to pay for it." And I don't think there's any question at all that we're going to be facing that very soon, and the insurance companies and the government, everybody else, is going to be portrayed as inhumane because you're not letting this person who has no other opportunity to take this drug. The rich people, I could care what they want. If they want to go off to Mexico and buy Laetrile, let them go. That's not going to help the rest of us.
It sounds like it does come back to you to like the payment problem, because like you just said, if the rich person wants to pay for it themselves, let them do what they want, right?
I don't think we can stop them if they want to take the stuff. There's all sorts of ways to find it. I mean, heroin's illegal, and a significant percentage of the population manages to get it and injure themselves with it.
So, right.
Passing a law saying you can't take Laetrile is not preventing people from taking Laetrile. it's just preventing, you know.
Well, laws in general don't prevent anything. They just make it harder and impose penalties if you do what you're not supposed to do.
They make it more expensive, yeah.
I think
it's a combination of things. It's partially the cost of who pays for this. And I really think it's immoral to say, I need to pay for, you know, but you and I need to pay for our next door neighbor's treatment, with a treatment that is, questionably effective and probably not effective. Remember, the drugs that get to stage three, treatment, which is the final stage that you clear through and says, boy, this drug is not only safe or at least safer than the disease, but also seems to be effective in treating it. The number of drugs that get to stage three and then are approved for actual distribution after that stage three is still only, I think, somewhere around 50% and 60% of those things and treatments come out and say, okay, this is good. We should do this to people.
So let me take it out of the realm for a little while, because this law also restricted it to terminal patients, right? But this is a more general question as well. What if, you know, this wasn't a cancer drug that might help terminal patients? What if it was a new proposed treatment for the common cold, you know, that has not been through any trials or anything like that? And we're not talking about something that will be $10,000 per pill. We're talking about something that people want to sell on the drugstore for, you know, $10 for a bottle of 100 pills. They just have no evidence whatsoever that it works or doesn't work. Should they be able to do that all the time already, Sam? In the nutrients, in the supplement section.
Yeah, absolutely. And at the end of those things, you know, they say this drug, prostates are particularly interested in me at age 76. But the ads talk about, gee, you'll be able to pee like a racehorse again and yada, yada, yada. And then at the end they say, by the way, this commercial has not been approved for use for any treatment, diagnosis, prevention of any disease known to humankind. So yeah, you can do that already for drugs of that cost. That's, you know, just don't call it a drug and don't say that the FDA has approved it. And unfortunately, and you can get away with it.
Let alone the supplements, is also the homeopathic crap. That's just water.
There's all those. Yeah. And all these, I mean, you just, until you see people who are dying of a terminal disease, you don't realize how much the thieves are out there preying on these people.
So another variant of that, I'm just throwing out a bunch of articles and a bunch of things related to drugs. What about getting drugs without a prescription? You know, I saw the commercial for drug X. It sounds like it's good. Why can't I just buy it? Why do I have to go to a doctor first?
Yeah. Well, more and more, you know, going back to when I was in med school again, the only drug we had for ulcers then was Maalox, which was over the counter. And then a guy, I forget who invented, I think it was Zollinger, came up with the drug that blocked acid. Cimetidine, if I recall, was the first one. I may be wrong in that. And anyway, that came out. It could only be gotten by prescription. And then a whole bunch more of those came. What's interesting is that you can go buy any of those over the counter anymore.
Right.
If you get a prescription for them, the same drug, same dosage, costs your insurance company about twice as much as you get it over the counter, which is why a lot of insurance companies have said, we won't cover this drug anymore. You can get it cheaper over the counter. But that's happened with the antihistamines. It's happened with the acid blockers and several other classes of drugs. And as long as the drug doesn't cause a lot of harm, that's probably okay. And I don't have any problem with it. I have a problem when it starts being antibiotics. I have a problem with it when it is drugs that are likely to have side effects and possibly severe side effects.
Well, it's been mentioned, for instance, that regular old Tylenol is the most lethal stuff you can buy over the counter by, you know, several orders of magnitude, because it's quite easy to take too much and damage your liver.
Absolutely, and if you drink, even Tylenol in the recommended dosages if you're an alcoholic is potentially lethal. And that's not made a lot of attention of. Aspirin's not particularly safe if you overdose on it. Even people, there was a study not too long ago studying the low-dose aspirin that a lot of us take to prevent heart attacks, the baby aspirin, 82 milligrams a day.
Yep.
That people who take that have about a 2-person per 1,000 increased risk of having a bleeding episode, which is, that's pretty small as far as I'm concerned. I take that risk, but I take it in the knowledge of what the risk is. A lot of people are taking it without knowing that there's any increased risk.
I mean, I think the common thing amongst all of these, I mean, you know, and there is the additional issue of insurance and who pays for it for expensive drugs. But the common issue in all of these is how paternalistic do we want the government to be here on the restrictions? In terms of, do we want the government saying, okay, this is okay to take, this is not okay, this is okay, this is not okay? Or do we feel like we should allow people to make that choice on their own? And I think part of where that comes down to is people making bad decisions there end up putting costs on everybody else because we do have a safety net.
Sure.
And also that most people, frankly, just aren't equipped to make that decision in an intelligent way. Like there's too much information out there that's too contradictory. If the drug companies are pushing this and that, you know, they're of course going to be saying, oh, my drug is wonderful and ignore all these side effects over here. You know, that's part of what they do.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, as a general consumer, I mean, I feel like I'm a relatively educated person, but when it comes to those kinds of decisions, I don't know. You know, well, I could go look some crap up on the internet, but I'm, you know, whatever research I can do in half an hour isn't going to be equivalent to your medical degree. And most people aren't going to have the time to even do that. They're going to go to the drugstore and look up and down the aisles and say, this says it helps my condition. I'll take it.
And that's kind of what I do. I hate to admit it, but I do. You know, and I know how frustrating it is because, you know, I just mentioned earlier today, I almost couldn't make this thing because my wife is having some problems with a kidney stone. 10 days ago, I knew she was passing a kidney stone and actually not passing a kidney stone and thought, gee, she needs a CAT scan and then to see a urologist. Well, we couldn't get in to see the urologist who's going to be doing some surgery on me later this year because she didn't have a referral from primary care doc. So she went to the primary care doc who ordered a study, not a CAT scan, but a different study that showed that, gee, there's some evidence of obstruction of the ureter.
Well, and it's like, thanks, I knew that.
Passing a kidney stone, yeah. And he said, well, you need to drink more and take some Tylenol and all will be well. Well, all is not well because finally tonight, after 10 days of this, we took her to the emergency room and the CAT scan is now done 9 days after I thought it needed to be done. And it shows a stone that's far too large to pass. It's 9 millimeters and 6 is the upper limits of what'll pass. So now she's going to have probably a lithotripsy to get rid of it. I, you know, and as a physician, I'm frustrated by how the system works. So I know what people think when they're, you know, you're dying of Lou Gehrig's disease. And you say, oh my God, here's this drug that looks like it might help. And or you're dying, your child is dying of a glycogen storage disease, and you say, gee, here's this lady who went out and got the
Lorenzo's oil
was that, yeah, the Lorenzo's oil that saved this child's life. Why can't I do that? Well, you know, I guess you can if you do it on your own, but don't ask me to pay for it because I don't know if it's effective, and I don't know that it's worth my money. It's like asking me to buy you an electric car because it's better than a gas car. It might be. But should I pay for it or you should pay for it? So it really
Ed, I'll tell you right now. I'll tell you right now, Ed, yes, you should buy me a car.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
No problem. Send me the bill. I'll send you a check.
There you go.
But yes, you see, it's really finances, But, you know, in all honesty, a lot of our life is finances. It comes down to it. And, you know, and because money is measurable. If you say, gee, I could save this baby's life with $100,000 and with a proven care, you know, or well, make it, if this baby is born who has a pyloric stenosis, that is an operation that costs you maybe $10,000 these days, and will give that baby a 70-year life expectancy 100% of the time. By God, I'll pay the $10,000 if the parents don't have it. I have no question about it because I know that surgery works. I know it helped them. But if you come up and say, gee, I don't want to put the baby through that. I see that if I rub Lorenzo's oil on his umbilicus, he'll get better and maybe not need that surgery. I'm not going to pay for that. I know it won't work, or I don't know if it'll work, and I know there's other treatments that do.
Right.
So I'm not going to vote for my congressman this fall, not just because of that, because there's a whole bunch of other things that he's crazy about, but that is a major factor of why I will not be voting for him when he runs this November.
Now, if I remember right, this law was passed by a significant bipartisan majority. This was not a...
It was.
It was not it something
was,
that...
And
it
was,
yeah.
Voting against it would be like saying, I don't think Americans should eat apple pie anymore.
Right,
and whenever you have legislation like that, you really need to say, "Wow, this is potentially dangerous."
Well, and this is, you know, I mentioned on the show a couple of weeks ago the what was it called, FEFSA, whatever it was, the sex trafficking law, which was similarly mm-hmm. passed by a large bipartisan majority. But if you ask the experts who actually deal in that space, most of them think it's going to be at this point it has been counterproductive and will actually cost lives, et cetera. But it's one of those things where it's like, how can you say you're against sex trafficking? I mean, no. How do you say you're against preventing sex trafficking? There, that's better.
Yeah, I think probably everybody's against illegal immigrants until you find out that today a baby was taken away while she was breastfeeding.
Yeah.
Taken away from her mother.
Yes.
Ooh, I don't think that's what I had in mind.
Okay, so, I'll be honest, Ed, I'm still not 100% convinced you're right on here, but you made some good arguments. So I appreciate the additional education into this. And I think in all of these cases, it's all, you know, I'm less worried about the financial implications. I figure we should be able to figure out how to absorb that, as I am worried about people being taken advantage of. And people taking the hope of the experimental drug and you know, people making money off them for something that there's really no evidence works or doesn't work. And it would be an entirely different thing if it was like, hey, the company that has the drug is working on a trial and will give it to you for free if you participate in the trial, blah, blah, blah. That's a whole different story than, you know, just enabling it
for this law.
Yeah. That's a whole different story if people are giving it away. But if you're potentially going out and fleecing really vulnerable people who are desperate for anything that might help by selling them shit that doesn't work, or at least there's no proof that it does work, and it's not part of a trial. Like, at the very least, I would hope that if you're trying an experimental drug on a new person, they automatically get enrolled in such a way so that whatever data comes out of that feeds back into the knowledge about the drug. If that's not even part of it, then it's like, yeah, there are all kinds of issues here.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So
yep.
Let's take a break and we'll come back.
Okay.
And the next topic is Trump deliberately trying to destroy the United States capability and status across the world and on everything else? Or does he really believe that what he's doing is the best possible thing to do? And what's the deal? We'll be back after this.
Yep.
Hey, we know when you listen to this show, you have thoughts about what we say. You probably want to vent about what we got wrong or what we left out, right? Or maybe you want to suggest some future topics we just haven't gotten to yet. Well then, tell us all about it. Right now, there are four ways to get feedback to us. First, you can go to the Curmudgeon's Corner Facebook page and leave comments on the post where we announce all the new episodes. Second, you could go to curmudgeonscorner.com, that's with a hyphen, and leave a comment there instead. Third, both Yvonne and I are on Twitter. You can talk to me at Abulsme, A-B-U-L-S-M-E, or Yvonne at I-M-B-O, I-M-B-O-U. Finally, if you don't want to make your comments in a public forum like that, just email me directly at abulsme@abulsme.com. Again, that's A-B-U-L-S-M-E. But, you know, if you don't want us to mention your feedback on the show, be sure to say so, because otherwise we're probably going to respond to your comments on a future show, because, you know, that's what makes the discussion. Thanks, and we look forward to hearing from you.
Okay, we are back. So first of all, I just wanted to call out the two articles that prompted Ed to ask this question. First, on June 10th, David Leonhardt in the New York Times opinion section, Trump tries to destroy the West. And then a follow-up to that on June 11th, same guy, same newspaper, Trump tries to wreck America's alliances. And both of these are just all relating to the fact that, you know, Donald Trump has been going around basically antagonizing all of our friends in the world. The G7 summit last week, it was all tense the whole way through. He was suggesting all kinds of things. He was apparently berating the various other heads of state at various meetings. And then he did agree to this final statement. But then Prime Minister Trudeau in Canada said something he didn't like after Donald Trump left. And from Air Force One, he issued a statement that basically said, well, screw that. I'm not signing the statement. Canada's, you know, being dishonest, out to get whatever. And yeah, this is where there were quotes by his aides saying there's a special place in hell for people like Trudeau and all this kind of stuff. And also, you know, since the very beginning, he's made comments about NATO. He's pulled us out of, you know, the Iran deal, TPP, various other international arrangements. So what's your take on this, Ed? And then I'll talk a little bit about where I am. But what's your take?
Okay, well, just start out with a little light episode of it. Someone compared fighting with getting in an argument with Canada to getting an argument with, and I don't remember who they said, but I would say compare it with getting in an argument with, what's his name? The guy on PBS all those years, that had the kids, Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, Mr. Rogers. Okay. Yeah.
Mr. Rogers is the Canada. Anyway, but as to the other, when you look at what's going on, Our traditional allies of NATO and Canada, Mexico is an ally, and all these other people, these have been people we have had trade with, that we've gone to war beside, that we have considered supporting us, and we've supported them. And now what's happening is one by one, we're alien. Hell, half of the countries in Europe are in the financial and the social condition they are because of what we did after World War II when we helped them rebuild under the Marshall Plan. And they're not only our allies, they're almost in some ways you could say like our brothers and sisters, because we helped them when they needed help and they help us. But now this man is insulting them, angering them, indicating to them that they're no longer worthy of trading with us. And so if they can't trade with us in a profitable manner, you know, the businesses and countries rely on trade. They have to look for someone else to trade with. Who are they going to trade with if not with us? And the answer to that, I think, is they're going to trade with Russia and China and nations that are our traditional enemies. At the same time as he's deliberately insulting and attacking and alienating these nations, he's cozying up to nations that have been for decades enemies of ours. These include Russia, North Korea at this point, China to some extent, although every other day he's either with China or against China. It's hard to tell which at any given moment.
So let me read one quote real quick that's relevant to this. No. This was from a speech given by the German foreign minister, whose name is Heiko Maas, I guess. I'm probably saying that wrong. But he gave a speech, I guess, on Thursday, Wednesday, June 13th. Here's the relevant part of it. Old pillars of reliability are crumbling under the weight of new crises. Alliances dating back decades are being challenged in the time it takes to write a tweet. The U.S. was long the leading power amongst the free nations. For 70 years, it was committed to freedom, prosperity, and security in Europe. A few days ago, I stated that we must respond to the decisions made by the U.S. with appropriate countermeasures. The fact that a German foreign minister has to say this is something that, to be honest, I wouldn't have thought possible for the longest time. However, the Atlantic has become wider under President Trump. His policy of isolationism has left a giant vacuum around the world. That's the quote.
I think the guy is spot on.
So now,
and as I said, it really, to me, it comes back to what's the motivation.
Well, and that's the question that I was about to bring up is like, there are a couple possibilities here. One is that Donald Trump has a vision of what's good for America that basically says all of this stuff is positive. These alliances were holding us back. Those alliances were causing us to spend money helping these other countries instead of helping ourselves. It restrains our actions. It costs us money. It's no good for us. And getting out of these things is the best thing that could possibly have happened to the United States. And so one view of this is, hey, that's really what Donald Trump believes. We may disagree with it. We may think he's completely out of his mind to think that is correct. And all the reasons why these alliances are good. But he honestly really believes that and believes that this is the right way to move the country forward in a positive way. Now, and that view says he may be mistaken, but he knows this. The alternative view, which it seems like you are implying, and I have not read these two articles by David Leonhardt, but is that Donald Trump is intentionally destroying these and knows that it's destructive and knows that it's harmful and wants to do it anyway. It's sort of implying that, you know, he actually is, his goal is to hurt the United States, which is an entirely different thing than saying his view of what is good for the United States is completely wrong and mistaken, but he is trying to help what he sees is the right way, path for the country. That's entirely different than implying he's intentionally trying to hurt the country.
Yeah. I hate to say that. It's hard for me to imagine that that's the case, but more and more, I can't see any other explanation. I find it very disturbing because he is so thoroughly destroying some of the pillars of what goes on in our nation, as well as our relations with other nations. His continual attacks on the press are an example. It's one thing to say that the press is wrong and that some reporters maybe are out to get me and telling lies about me. It's another thing to say, as he said, I think it was yesterday, that the press is the greatest threat to the United States in the world. You don't say that sort of thing in a nation where one of the founding tenets of this nation is the freedom of the press. Unless you've got some motive of destroying that particular important freedom.
Okay, so the exact Donald Trump tweet, which was 14 hours ago as we're recording this, is so funny to watch the fake news, especially NBC and CNN. They are fighting hard to downplay the deal with North Korea. 500 days ago, they would have begged for this deal. Looked like war would break out. Our country's biggest enemy is the fake news so easily promulgated by fools. Now, I've actually seen a lot of commentary on this tweet saying this has to be somebody on his staff because there's no way Donald Trump knows the word promulgate.
Okay.
But anyway, if you parse it carefully, he is not saying the press is the biggest enemy. He's saying it's fake news that's the enemy. But still, the sentiment has been clear from Donald Trump over and over and over again that the media is not to be trusted. They're out to get him. Blah 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 blah.
Yeah. And if you go back through the history of autocrats and dictators who seized control of relatively free nations, the consistent thing is one of the first things you do is seize control of the press. Next, you seize control of education and the military.
What's interesting here is given the various institutions that exist here, Donald Trump, at least this far, and maybe not ever, he's not trying to actually seize control of the press. But what he is doing consistently over and over again, and has been doing since the moment he came down that escalator in Trump Tower and said he was running for president, is trying to sow what has often been called FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt, that you can't trust the press. Their motivations aren't to be trusted. They're lying. They're the ones who are telling you bullshit, and don't pay attention to them because they're just out to get me, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's not, so it ends up serving, almost the same purpose as, actually censoring the press or taking control. What you're doing is making it so they can say whatever they want. If nobody believes them, who cares? Who cares what they're saying?
Well, and there comes a point where if you destroyed a sufficient amount of the faith in your press or whatever is you're after, where when you decide to take over, there's no objection. Hey, no problem. Because
those
lying bastards need to be done away with.
Yeah, or the objections come from people who are in a tiny minority. Because everybody is, doesn't know what to think, and well, it might be Donald Trump. He also has very much has made it clear that he doesn't care about winning over the entire population. He just cares about making sure that his base is fed and happy and continues to think what they think. Like he could care less what us college educated elites who actually read, lots of news every day. He doesn't care what we think, that we're not his target audience at all.
Absolutely not. No. And it's I'm forgetting the term. It's not skylighting.
Gaslighting.
Gaslighting. If you tell a lie and keep telling it, and get other people to agree with you in telling it, eventually the people who initially said, gee, that's a straight out lie, begin saying, well, maybe I'm wrong. And once you have them to the point where they're questioning themselves, boy, you are halfway there.
Yeah,
and that's what's happening. And we all do. I don't believe I read in the press anymore unless I see it in several places.
So let's save some of this for the next segment, because that's a little bit more what the next segment is about. And get back to the motivation question here, because I think it actually, maybe it's just plain unknowable what Donald Trump's motivations here are. But I think there really is a significant difference in how we should think about it. If Donald Trump is actually trying to help the country in the way that he thinks is best, and we just disagree with his opinion on that, versus he's intentionally trying to harm the country. Do we feel I don't feel like I have evidence that says Donald Trump is sitting there each day saying, how can I fuck things up? I think he's incompetent. I think his ideas about right and wrong are completely off base. I think Yvonne and I talked about last week what I think are boiling down to sort of my three tenets of understanding Donald Trump. Number one, perception matters more than reality. Number two, everything is a zero-sum game. Number three, rules are for suckers. And I think between those three things, I think that sums up where Donald Trump is really coming from. You might add a fourth rule that says he's kind of dumb and never looks beyond the surface explanation of something, maybe. Although he has got an instinct for certain things, which is different, I think. But with all of that, I honestly don't think he wakes up every morning and says, how can I fuck things up? How can I make things worse? I think within the boundaries of those three rules, even including the one that says rules are for suckers, he's trying to implement his vision of what he thinks is right. It's just that it is diametrically opposed to anything I think is right. I wonder if you feel like the other alternative here is if we believe that he's actually intentionally damaging things, then we get into, okay, with all this Russia collusion stuff and everything else, is he actually being paid off by Putin or something to, like, please do these things to harm the USA? And he's like, okay, yes, sir, I'm doing it. What do we really think it goes that far? I mean, it's certainly, I have to say at this point, it's not out of the realm of the possible, but I'm not convinced of that at this point.
Yeah. Well, you're sort of, my problem is that I have not thought that. I've resisted it, and I've thought that I just disagree with him. But each week, things seems to be pushing further, and I say, well, Christ, he would never do this, and then the next week he does it. And I say, well, okay, maybe that sort of makes sense. Cozying up to North Korea makes good sense, but holy cow, I hope that I'm wrong, but I think there is going to come a point where we're going to have to ask ourselves as a nation, do we have a president who's deliberately attempting to harm our nation? I don't know what the answer to that is right now. I just know that 6 months ago, I thought that was a stupid question to ask. And now I'm beginning to say, Jesus, I hope not. And that's a terrible thing to say, that I hope not. That shouldn't even enter the realm of possibility.
Right.
I mean, at the very worst, Richard Nixon, when things were going to hell in a handbasket, I don't think any of us questioned at that time that he really thought he was the best thing for our nation. The way he was going about it was wrong, and that sort of thing. But I never questioned but what he thought. I'm the best guy for the nation right now. I'm not a crook, and by God, I can take care of things. And I no longer think that about Donald Trump. I think Donald Trump is either an actual enemy of our nation or is so engrossed in making Donald Trump great and fabulously wealthy that he doesn't much care what the hell happens to the United States.
Yeah, I mean, maybe indifference is a possibility there. I still think the most likely scenario here is he honestly believes the things he's doing are the right thing to do and will, quote unquote, make America great again. He thinks that, tariffs are going to put those goddamn other countries that are taking advantage of us in their place. He thinks that these alliances are holding us down and costing us money that we shouldn't be spending. You know, he thinks that, it's vitally important to stop all these people from coming in through our borders. And if separating kids from their families deters more people from coming in, so much the better, and that he actually believes these things are the right and good thing to do. And I obviously disagree completely and think that's entirely warped. But I think that's what he believes. I am not convinced. I'm one who thinks there's a lot to this Russia collusion stuff, that he probably did work with Russia. And there's new stuff out this week that about the UAE and Saudi Arabia as well, and that all of them were involved in trying to provide help to Donald Trump to swing the election to him. And I believe Donald Trump probably was very much involved in that and happy to accept that help and blah, 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 blah. And maybe he feels some obligations to help. To reciprocate, like, you know, Russia helped me, so I'll help Russia. Saudi helped me, so I'll help Saudi. I believe he probably thinks those things, but I don't think he's coming at it from the point of view of, and therefore I'm going to screw the United States. Maybe I'll be proved to be wrong, but I think he's more of, you know, an amoral opportunist who just didn't see anything wrong with getting into those kinds of entanglements with people who would help him. It's just, yeah, of course, you help me, I'll help you. That's how the world works, right?
I hope you're right.
Just to be clear, I think all that stuff is horrible anyway. I don't think that's how the world should work. And I think that it violates all kinds of rules that are there for very good reasons. But it's still a different thing than I want to destroy the United States. I don't think he wakes up every morning with that thought in his head. But like you said, it tells us a lot about where we are, that thought is imaginable. Like, even to me, I don't think that's the case. But if facts came out that proved that that was the case, I wouldn't be shocked. And that says a lot already.
Yeah. And I guess even if we assume that, let's say he does think he's doing the best for the nation, the things that he's doing, many of them are going along the lines of destroying what for over 200 years now we've thought are what make our nation great. You know, it's freedom of press, freedom of religion, freedom to be able to walk around and do what I want to do, and on and on and on. These things are all being able to vote. And for all citizens to be able to vote, for all citizens, whatever their sex, sexuality, race, or anything else, being guaranteed all the things that have come in the first 10 amendments, that's clearly not on the agenda of Trump and his fellows in our Congress. They innately believe, a number of those people, that gay citizens don't deserve any rights. It's not even an issue of, gee, they shouldn't be allowed to marry. It's an issue of, we're not even sure they both deserve to live.
Well, I think you're right. There are certainly some people who probably are at that point, but I think that is a tiny minority still. But it's
a minority that the rest don't stand up and say, holy Christ, get out of my house.
Well, yes. And I think that's absolutely what you're seeing. And with that kind of thing, and also with the out and out racists and white supremacists and those kinds of things, you know, Donald Trump's they're good people on both sides comment, was a prime example of that. But there are many others. It's just the notion of, you know, maybe we're not going to out and out say that this is what we believe, but we're certainly not going to worry about the people who do think that. It's fine. Whatever, you know?
Yep.
And I think that's where a lot of, certainly with Donald Trump, but also just other Republicans reacting to Donald Trump and the way that he acts about things. You know, it's okay. As long as he's given us our tax cuts, we're okay with whatever else he does, you know, so.
Yeah, the tax cuts that, by the way, are going to have a $2 trillion additional deficit, not a $1 trillion, but a $2.5 trillion, something like that.
What's a couple trillion between friends?
Yeah, right.
Okay. Let's take another break, and when we come back, we will talk about the complexity of things like the Russia investigation, and why that makes it hard for people to gel around what's actually wrong with all that, or not. We'll be back after this.
Celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, we are back. So first of all, as I said at the very beginning of the show, this segment was sort of prompted by an article I saw, which I, looking right before the show, I have not found. So at this point right here, I'm going to try again after we record the show to find that article. If I find the reference, I will insert it right here. Do, do, do. This is Sam from the future here. I just spent another, I don't know how long, looking at the last 30 days of things I tweeted, the last 30 days of things I'd posted in the Curmudgeon's Corner Slack, and I did not find it. I don't know what this article was that inspired me to think about this topic. I know that it was an article. It was not a brand new thought for me. I think it was about 2 weeks ago, maybe three, but I couldn't find it. So, sorry. Do, do, do. Okay, so hopefully I found it. If not, I'm sorry, guys. but anyway, the point of this article was that, you know, the press is so obsessed about the minutiae of today's revelations about the ongoing Donald Trump scandal. So, like, for instance, today, I was listening to a little bit of MSNBC on my commute home, and they were talking about you know, Trump's lawyer Cohen and how he fired his lawyers or his lawyers fired him because he can't pay them anymore. And what does that imply? And is he going to flip? Is because now that he can't pay for this anymore, and does the fact that he's currently without a lawyer mean that he's on the verge of flipping? Some sources are saying that, and some blah 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 blah. And there was also coverage of how there has been new news of a new particular source that recently talked to Mueller, who has said in an interview with some news outlet that they were aware of conversations between the government officials in Saudi Arabia and the UAE connecting them to Cohen and other Trump folks during the campaign, where they were wanting to help the Trumps, and that Mueller was now looking into this as well. So not just, you know, did Trump collude with Russia to get help during the campaign, but did he also collude with these other countries? And did they help in material ways to help Donald Trump? And that was just today. And every single day, it seems, there are new developments, or at least several times a week, there are new significant developments in this story. But when I say significant developments, I'm saying we find out about a new connection here, a new conversation happened, or a meeting that happened at this such and such a date, or emails that were exchanged on some topic. And if you add all of these up, they add to a fairly compelling picture of misbehavior on the part of Donald Trump's staff, at the very least. Some questions about how much Donald Trump himself was involved, but his family and staff and all the people around him were clearly up to their necks involved with a number of foreign places. And similarly, we have developments in the corruption story. Similarly, we have the developments on the details of how Russia was trying to do information warfare in various ways, and whether or not it was successful or not, but what they were trying to do. All of these details And so if you turn on the news, especially a liberal news outlet like MSNBC, you're going to hear about today's new development. Here's the new bad thing that Trump or someone in the Trump administration or someone in the Trump campaign did. But we're losing the big picture of how do all of these things come together, because we're always talking about that new thing of the week. And so whereas the fundamental big picture is one of massive corruption throughout the Trump family, throughout the Trump administration, at the very least, things that are shady, but many of which look to be illegal. There have been a number of people already indicted. There's investigations continuing. On the worst end of it is the kind of thing we were talking about in the last segment of, oh my God, maybe Trump is completely under Putin's thumb. And that evidence is not public. We don't have that. But that's the worst end of the spectrum. Actually is, at this point, Donald Trump himself is a foreign agent and acting against the interests of the United States. By no means has that been proved publicly, but that is in the realm of discussion. But even chopping that off and saying, let's forget about that for the moment, there's crime after crime after crime with corrupt behavior with these people. But that message doesn't get through because all of the conversation is about all of these little details. Meanwhile, Donald Trump, all he has to do is say, witch hunt, fake news, witch hunt. And for the people who are inclined to listen to him anyway, and who are inclined to disbelieve the press, they see, on the one hand, a really freaking complicated mess full of stuff that takes paying lots of attention to understand what the fuck is going on. I feel like, I pay relatively close attention to this, but I've lost track of all the names. I feel like I have to start doing one of those, dedicate a wall of my house to start doing one of those boards where I put up little cards and yarn going between cards to map out all the connections and stuff. And, I haven't actually done that. It's kind of tempting, but I feel like I can't even keep track of all this stuff, and I'm somebody who pays attention to it on a daily basis. If you're someone who only occasionally tunes into this thing, it's completely understandable why the reaction is, oh, there they go about that fucking Russia stuff again. Who cares?
And every time I reach a point where I say, I'm just not going to pay any attention to it anymore, something happens that sucks me back into it again.
Well, and I know one thing you've brought up a number of times, Ed, both on previous shows that you've joined us and on our Curmudgeon's Corner Slack, is that at the same time, there are actual policy things happening on a day-to-day basis that we're not paying attention to because of this, where, the EPA has been getting rid of all these regulations. I mean, and the immigration stuff has been getting a lot of attention, but that's happening. But we're all obsessed over, what's the latest Donald Trump thing, and, did he... And in addition to the Russia stuff we're talking about, people also start talking about, oh, look at that. He made a typo in that last tweet. Isn't he stupid? Things like that.
Yep.
So
our political discourse in this nation has really degenerated to a point where most of what we do is engage in ad hominem and insult based discourse, in which we don't worry about what we're saying. We're just who has the most inventive and injurious insult and adjective to use. And I've really begun weeding out my Facebook contacts, because the folks who have nothing to offer but insults and that kind of stuff, I'm not interested in talking to them. I can't change their mind, and all they do is make me angry. And then when I get angry, I say things that I wish I hadn't said.
Yeah, I mean, I've never used Facebook as a place to do discussion on politics. I leave all of that for this show, but I get my fill of it on this show. And if anybody brings up politics and wants to talk about it, in my day to day life, I'm like, oh, I don't really want to talk about it. I've sort of got it out of my system here. But I don't know. I mean, I found that argument about the forest for the trees in terms of things like the Russia thing to actually be a very valuable insight, because it shows us that the press is failing to a degree in terms of what is the communication about this? Because there needs to be, every time there's some new little development, the headline should be sort of putting that into the context of the larger story, not necessarily about that new thing. And I understand for news junkies like me, you know, I would get tired. I wouldn't want to see that all the time. You know, I wouldn't want to see let me re-summarize everything we've learned over the last 2 years. So I understand that it's not done that way, and that's why it's not done that way. But at the same time, you know, what people are missing is the counter to Donald Trump and Donald Trump and Fox News constantly saying, there's nothing here, it's bullshit, it's bullshit, there's nothing here, it's bullshit. You know, there needs to be a counter there that says, actually, you know, there's a massive load of corruption here. It's happening every day. Let's not forget that, you know, because it's not just what happened in 2016. It's also the new stuff that's happening every freaking week, where we're seeing, you know, tentative evidence at the very least, shouldn't say tentative evidence. There are continuous hints and that there are connections going on to this very day. Like there were the stories a couple weeks ago about how Donald Trump's company got favorable treatment in China. And then like a couple days later, we made a major policy reversal on something that was going on in China. It's like, can we prove a quid pro quo? No, but come on, this looks incredibly bad. And it just gets washed away in the daily cycle of the news. You know, I mean, it's not that it wasn't covered, but you know, it was a story for like a day, and then the next big revelation completely erased it. And so all of these things have become, I mean, people kept using the term normalized, but because these things are so constant and all the time, and we're finding out about new stuff, everybody's becoming numb to it. And it's just like, oh yeah, okay, he's corrupt, tell me something new. Like, that's normal now. That's what you expect. Should we do anything about it? Well, whatever, he's corrupt. But if he's doing stuff I like, he's my corrupt guy, so who cares?
That comes back to the old question of the does the end justify the means?
It does indeed. And you know, Yvonne and I have had
still a few of us.
Yvonne and I,
a few of us out here who think that the means are what justify the end. If the means are corrupt, then the end is going to be corrupted.
Yeah, I mean, Yvonne and I have had the discussion several times on this show of like, try to do the thought experiment. If you had the liberal Donald Trump, who was just as corrupt, just as influenced by foreign powers, et cetera, just as incompetent, but he was nominating Supreme Court justices we liked and doing various other policy things that we approved of, would we look the other way? Because that seems like what most elected Republicans and quite possibly most Republicans at large are in the mode of, is like, we'll just look away from that stuff. We don't care. Some of it we'll say we don't believe it, but okay, we actually believe a lot of it's true, but we don't care because he's accomplishing things that we approve of. If that was reversed and Donald Trump was doing a ton of things that I approved of, would I look the other way and say, as long as he's doing the stuff I like, so what? I don't think I would, but honestly, it's hard to put yourself in that position and say what you would do. But I feel like I would be consistent there and be like, you know, there are plenty of other people who would accomplish the things I like from a policy point of view. I don't need to go with somebody who is you know, a horrible human being and corrupt and dishonest and all of these things. You know, I can get somebody else who agrees with all my stuff, who will enact my policy preferences, who doesn't have those qualities. And so, yeah, get him the hell out of there. I don't know. But I think as long, though, I think it is a difficult thing. You know, back to the main topic here in terms of how the press conducts these stories. One of the counter arguments I've heard is, you know, well, actually, it's not the press's job to try to boil it down to Trump is corrupt and just repeat that all the time. Instead, that's what the opposition party's job is. You know, the press should be talking about, here's the new thing we found out today. Here's the new thing we found out today. You know, and it's the opposition party who should be really going after this and making the case. And the Democrats also aren't really doing that. They are trying to make the various policy cases, which is great. They are, to some degree, doing the Donald Trump is awful thing, but they're not, you know, it's not from a communications point of view, it's not a prime message. And I think that's intentional, because you hear the Republicans all the time saying, like, if you just run on Donald Trump is bad, that's all you got. What about policy? And I think Democrats have actually taken that message. I'm not sure they should. I think Donald Trump is bad is actually not that bad of approach, but it does have to be mixed with policy things as well. But for the most part, Democrats who are actually running for office, as opposed to sort of the talking heads that you see on TV all the time, are talking about policy and are tiptoeing around the Donald Trump issues as much as they can. And in terms of the Russia stuff, the personality stuff, the lies, the all of that kind of thing, and trying to concentrate on the policy things. Here's what Donald Trump's administration is doing that's harmful. They'll talk, you know, and I think that's an okay approach. I completely, when I saw that article, I was like, yes, you've kind of nailed it, that to understand all the things that are bad is complicated. You have to dig into that, not just the Russia stuff, but even on, like, you know, why are tariffs counterproductive economically? I mean, you have to really dig into that issue to have a clue. Otherwise, you hear Donald Trump ranting about, like, you know, Canada screwing us over milk. And you're like, oh, Canada's screwing us over milk and Donald Trump's standing up to them. Well, good. To get past that, you have to dig in and understand the underlying facts. And that takes time, work, and yes, in some cases, education to figure that out. And so as long as you have the person who's willing to just get up there and pound their fist really hard and repeat something over and over and over again, regardless of the facts, it makes it really hard to get that message through. And I don't know. I don't know the right way to combat it. And I think that's one of the things that Donald Trump, you know, I talk a lot about how Donald Trump is incompetent in many areas, but this is one of Donald Trump's areas of genius, that is to command attention and drive the discussion in a direction that is useful for him, and to communicate in a way that is hard to counter. I mean, it goes back to the old saying about, you know, a lie goes all the way around the world before the truth gets on its boots. It's the same idea here.
Well, and even the Canada tariff issue is a good example. In order to research what's going on, that it's going to take a couple days. I don't care how much you know about it, before you can put the data together to come out and say, well, here's the actual truth. We actually have a surplus in our trade with Canada. It's not a lot, but it's something like $40,000 out of several.
And you have to know who to trust as well. Like, even if you find that number somewhere, if Donald Trump is saying something else.
Yeah, hopefully you can trust the United States Department of Commerce, who put out the data.
Well, that's the deep state. They're all out to get Donald Trump.
I guess. But, you know, the point is that it takes you, say it takes you 48 hours to put together enough to refute and say, this was wrong, and here are the real facts. By then, the conversation is not about that anymore. We're not talking about a trade with Mexico, or we're talking about building Mercedes. And by the time you find out that, well, geez, 90% of the Mercedes that sell in the United States are made in the United States, you say, well, Christ, no, we're talking now about Britain. And there is no way you keep up with the pace of the news these days with facts. And I guess maybe that's part of the reason why all we do is trade insults, because you can't keep up with the facts. Unless you are an incredible expert on every single thing going on, you can't refute it fast enough to keep up with the rate at which I don't want to say lies, I don't like that word, but the distruths come out.
Yeah.
So I don't know how the press can keep track of what's going on. It's just not possible.
Yeah, and I know they're out there, but it'd be useful to have a little bit more prominence to sort of the places that do have the overall summary, you know, of an issue or of the Russia investigation or whatever, that lets you take a step back and like remind you of the big picture and how these things fit together. And like I said, I know they're out there. I know I could go to my web browser right now and probably bring one up within a couple minutes. But like, as you're following the day-to-day back and forth, that's not the picture you get. The picture is always like the issue of the day, or not even the issue of the day. Sometimes it's the issue of the hour. And like you said, it all washes over you so fast that even us news junkies are left spinning. I don't see how anybody who's sort of a casual consumer of the news, who checks in only rarely, can have anything but confusion over what's happening.
Yeah. No, it's just, it's not possible, because, and then they keep throwing monkey wrenches. People make up complete just purely lied stories. The meme that goes around every few weeks about I was behind a woman in the store today who had 15 kids and she was on food stamps and she was an illegal immigrant and yada yada. Well, and you know, the illegal immigrants, unless you have a green card, you can't get food stamps, and you know, obviously they're lies. But you don't just want to say, well, this is a lie. You want to get the facts together. But by the time you got it, they're off on the next rant.
Right. And then if you use a fact checker site, then of course they're biased. You know.
Yeah.
So,
that's the other answer. Well, they just make up the truth. Those are alternative facts.
Yeah. It's a never ending. If you try to go after these things, it's a never ending proposition. And I don't know, like I said, it's not even like the pure fake news. I know that's a problem and some people are misled on it. But again, just like dipping in and out of the news you do see, you know, for someone who's not watching every day, every moment, it's going to look like just a mess of stuff. And you are going to think, oh, CNN is clearly out to get him. All they ever have is negative stuff about him. And he says it's not true. So, and I like him, so I'm going to believe him. Or again, saying, well, maybe it is true, but it's okay because he's doing stuff I like. Or some stuff I saw today, and I've seen numerous examples, but there was one tweet that went around earlier this week talking about somebody who, you know, a liberal type person who was at a gas station somewhere, and somebody with a MAGA hat came up to him and was basically saying, I think the quote, I'm not going to remember the exact quote, but it was something like, I don't care what Donald Trump fucks up, as long as he's pissing off people like you.
Okay.
Do. Sam from the future here. I couldn't let that one go without giving a proper attribution and read of that tweet. It was by Andrew J. Greger. So Twitter handle at Andrew J. Greger, all together, G-R-E-G-O-R. And the tweet was, at a gas station, a guy comes up after seeing my fuck Trump sign. Him. You know why we love Trump so much? Me. No. Him. Because he gets under the skin of liberal faggots like you. We don't care what he fucks up as long as he pisses you off. And then he closes the tweet off, MAGA in a nutshell. Anyway, that was the tweet I was thinking of. Do, do, do. I think we have reached the end of the show, Ed.
I think we probably have.
So thank you, Ed, for filling in for Yvonne, who hopefully will be back next week. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we're putting this one's coming out a little bit earlier in the week than it usually does. So there's a little bit shorter gap since the last show, and there'll be a little bit longer gap until the next show probably. So sorry about that if it messes up your schedules, but that's what we had to do based on all of our schedules. As usual, if you like the show, come to facebook.com/curmudgeonscorner and add some comments, like the show, tell your friends about the show, all of this kind of stuff. But give us comments and tell us what we should be talking about, what you think of what we said, all of that sort of thing. If you really like us, patreon.com/curmudgeonscorner, and you can throw us a couple bucks. We always appreciate that. And you can get various benefits at various levels, including access to our Curmudgeon's Corner Slack, which is lots of fun. It's basically a chat room where a bunch of us can talk about things in between shows. I think that's it. Oh, I'm at Abel Smay if you want to follow me on Twitter. Ed doesn't have a Twitter that he pays attention to. So if you want to get...
I gave up on Twitter. I can't say anything in 280 characters or 560 either, which...
It's 280. But if you have a message to get to Ed, though, you can send it to me, feedback@curmudgeons-corner.com, and I'll pass it along. Or he'll probably see it on the Facebook page as well. So that's it.
That works.
Thanks, everybody.
Okay.
And we'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.